You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Dave Hodges is as mad as hell, and he's not going to take it anymore.
I'd like to help you, Judges. I really, really would, but the feeling in my head, it's too much and it's not good. I'm standing in a window, so I'm shouting through the wall, and I'd like to give the information, asking for more. But what makes noise? It's ringing in my ear. Blood makes noise. And I can't really hear you in the thick of my ear.
Common sense is not so common. This is the Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges.
Welcome to hour number three, and our thanks to Bob Griswold from ReadyMadeResources.com for joining us and helping us to learn how to prepare for the different terrorist situations that way and likely to increase in the future. Our thanks also go out to Lisa Haven for joining us in the first hour. Make sure you catch her on her YouTube channel. She's terrific. And thanks again to Lisa for joining us. In this hour, we're going to be joined by Pat Wood in just a moment. I did a pre-record with Pat a few days ago, and you're not going to believe what he has to say about China and how it could relate to us. It's downright scary. This hour is brought to you by Numana Foods, and you heard the importance of food in the last hour. Go to numana.com/Hodges and use the coupon code Hodges9 to take 5% off. Again, that's numana.com/Hodges. Take 5% off with the coupon code Hodges9. Boy, oh boy. Whoever thought 10 years ago I'd be sitting here talking about prepping? I never thought I would be, but you know what? Only a fool wouldn't be prepping right now, and I mean honestly, a fool. Also, we're brought to you this hour by Health Masters, and you've heard me tell the story. My back, my knee, and a whole assortment of other maladies that catch up to you as the body begins to age. You've heard Doug Hagman talk about Health Masters. There's nowhere else I go first when I have a problem than to Dr. Ted Brewer. In fact, I've got two friends who are sporting conditions. One is pregnancy-related, and the other is high blood pressure-related. And Dr. Ted's getting a call from me tomorrow on this. I mean, way before I go to a doctor, I go to Dr. Ted. Healthmasters.com, and you'll take 5% off if you're a Common Sense Show listener. So you want to make sure you use that coupon code 5HODGES. That's the number 5, 5HODGES. Again, Healthmasters.com. Coupon code for 5% off is 5HODGES. Well, I want to get right to the interview with Pat, and I'll have some closing comments at the end. It's a very telling interview. Pat Wood.
Hi, everybody. This is Dave Hodges of the Common Sense Show, and we're the show that's freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. And on the newsmaker line with me, we have my old friend Pat Wood. And Pat Wood, as we know, is really into technocracy. Started out really with Agenda 21 and kind of morphed into technocracy. And Pat and I are going to talk about a few things. Pat, welcome to the show. Glad you could join us.
Hey, thanks, Dave. I appreciate that. And I will point out that technocracy.news is the only site on the Internet that you can go for critical information on technocracy. There is no other site anywhere.
I know. Mike Adams champions this site a lot.
Yep.
And so, that's a great endorsement. Mm-hmm. But we're going to really kind of focus on three areas. And the first area that I want to talk about, and this is more speculative, but I want to lay the groundwork. And I'm hopeful that us putting out what we're going to put out here, which will be incomplete, we want people to come forward if you have information about this. And specifically what I'm referring to are the fires. And I've had occasion to talk to someone about storage of data technology involving HARP and lasers, and when that was said to me, bingo, I was thinking maybe those rumors about laser attacks to start those fires in Northern California are true. Pat, I know you don't have any hard information, but what do you think?
Well, of course, the technology is out there to do such a thing. If somebody had a mind to do it, and they had the equipment, hardware, and stuff to do it, it is available, I'm sure. But there has been no evidence to date to actually indicate that that could be, you know, a real possibility. And unfortunately, when the government, whether it be fire departments or the FBI, does investigations, they very seldom come out with any substantive, you know, substantive information for us, the people. So we can't really expect that there's going to be a detailed investigation on how those fires were started and stuff. I know they're looking and whatever, and they may find that, you know, the location and maybe some other information, but we're not likely to hear about it, I don't think. But I will say that fires have been a weapon of choice, if you will, of jihadists, you know, Islamic jihadists around the world. They've been very, and ISIS claimed responsibility for that fire. We don't have any proof of that they did it. They didn't catch anyone. But I remember several years ago that Australia was almost burned to the ground, it seemed like. There were so many fires that were set in Australia, and they finally traced it back to Islamic radicals who had made it a pattern to light fires when they could be particularly destructive. And, of course, there's lots of eucalyptus trees in Australia. That's how eucalyptus got up to Northern California, by the way. It came from Australia. It's not a native tree to Northern California. And so eucalyptus trees burn like a matchstick. They just are like a pencil. They just go poof, and they've got lots of oil, and it just burns like a hot torch. Well, that's what happened in Australia. And some of the trees that burned in Northern California were also eucalyptus trees. But once the fire got started, however it got started, it was uncontainable. There's no way you're going to stop a fire like that. Firemen have told me that. You can't deal with a fire that gets that hot, blown by that kind of wind. All you can do is just wait it out. And that's basically what they did. But I am concerned, and I'd like to see some investigation on this, as to what happened. How did the smart meters that everybody had on the side of their homes, thank you to PG&E, Pacific Gas and Electric up there, it's a utility, most everybody had smart meters in that area. And I would be very interested to know how the smart grid held up under that kind of attack with fires and substations blowing up and transformers blowing up on telephone poles and stuff. When they get too hot, they go up like a cinderary. I would like to know how the smart grid handled that whole affair, because it may well be that the smart meters on the side of home simply blew up and or melted down or whatever and helped to actually exacerbate some of the fires that took place on homes. But, you know, I don't know who would do that kind of investigation, but I think that's a fair question to ask. I really do.
I can bet you that PG&E won't be looking into that.
Well, they'll look into it, but they're not going to tell you and me.
Fair enough. Yeah, you cut right to the chase on that. That's true.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I just wanted to put that out there, and to everybody else, if you have information about what Pat is raising in terms of these questions, we would like to hear from you. Pat, the second area that I really wanted to get into is, you had mentioned this to me before we went on air, and I'm hearing it from a lot of other people, that surveillance now of the American people and really planet-wide in certain countries is just off the charts.
It is off the charts everywhere. There's not one country on the planet at this point that is not surveilling the people. And the type of surveillance that's taking place is common across all these different nations. In other words, it's the same type of information that's being gathered. You see it in China, or I should say, what you see in China, you see here in the United States. You see it, same technology in India, in parts of Europe, Pakistan, and there's other, you know, smaller countries around the world. It's the same MO everywhere you go. Dave, it's just like Smart Grid. Smart Grid was started in 2009 all around the world using stimulus money with no public demand whatsoever. They just said, let's do this. We'll use stimulus money to get Smart Grid cooking. So all of a sudden, all these initiatives popped up in different countries, including ours, to implement Smart Grid. Well, the same thing is happening with surveillance. The same stuff is popping up everywhere at the same time. And the perfection of it is in China right now. China, I think, has the, if there was an award to give them, right? they should get the award for the most comprehensive surveillance of their citizens. They have cameras everywhere. They're surveilling everything that people do, everything people say. They're using artificial intelligence to analyze it all. And if you don't measure up to their social status of supporting the party line and so on, you'll find yourself kicked out of school, kicked out of your apartment, your credit's cut off. Basically, you're shunned from society. It's incredible. And people smile when they talk about China. The professor in Sweden that is calling for a climate dictatorship in Europe to fight climate change has said that China is the ideal model for technocracy. Of course, the IMF has said the same thing. But, you know, people are looking at China thinking, wow, China is really, you know, they're really on the leading edge of this. They really got this technocracy thing down. And I'll tell you what, it is already entered into a total scientific dictatorship in China. And you can't call it a communist dictatorship anymore. It's not. That's not what it is anymore. Communism was a stepping stone to get where they are now. But when they're done with the communists over there, they will throw them under the bus so fast, and they'll probably all end up in some kind of a, you know, night of the long knife slaughter. But the technocrats are going to rule the day in China. You know, they really already do right now, but they're going to totally rule the day when they get complete power. So this is what we have to look forward to. And what makes you sick is that the spy technology, surveillance technology that they perfected in China, most of it all came from the United States, almost 100% of it. But the companies in the U.S. that invented this stuff couldn't implement it here or even test it because it was patently illegal. They couldn't do it. So China said, hey, come over here. We'll pay you lots of money. We like that stuff. So they went to China. They perfected their surveillance technology. And now that they've got it perfected, they're re-importing it back in the United States.
My gosh.
This is, somebody should say there ought to be a law. But yeah, I say that facetiously because no law is going to save us at this point. But this surveillance thing is absolutely over the top. And I just have to go back to the original tenets of technocracy from the 1930s. They themselves said that they were creating that technocracy was the science of social engineering. That's what they said. And they looked at society as an engineering project that had to be monitored, that had to be, engineered and controlled, manipulated, like a machine, like a factory. And that's what these nutcakes are doing. They're off the rails, I'm telling you. They're really off the rails as far as humanity is concerned. But they look at us, and in China, they look at their own people as just one big herd of cattle in a feedlot. Move them to this pen. Move them to that pen. Give them this diet. Give them that diet. You know, eventually, I mean, they're just animals anyway, you know, so you don't worry about it. So China announces last year that they're going to move 200 million farmers off the land in China and send them into cities. They're just going to rip them up. Send them into cities. Relocate them.
You just beat me to my next question.
Wow.
I was going to ask you about the ghost cities.
Yep, that's what they're going to do.
Pre-manufactured cities. Now, I understand this has already been going on for a while where they're forcibly relocating people in the rural areas to these ghost cities. Was that report inaccurate?
No. They are relocating them. I don't know if that was their original intent, but they are doing it now, and these poor farmers have no skills. They have no hope of any kind of a life anywhere other than on the land. And in the meantime, China has said in one of their press releases that as soon as the land is cleansed, I love that word, as soon as they've cleansed the land, they're going to reclaim the land for factory farming.
Can you explain
and
that?
So, well, yes. This is the largest eminent domain grab in the history of the world.
(Clears
In other words, they're just taking the land from the people, and they're going to give it to the corporate farming empire that already controls the global food supply.
Monsanto?
Well, in America, you've got Cargill, ADM, Archer Daniels Midland, companies like that, that control, I don't know, something like 80% of the food supply in America. There's like five companies that control virtually all of food supply. And those are the ones that will go into a place like China, set up their factory operations, their factory farm. And it, by and large, China tends to do it all with robots. Robots. Robot farming. Wow.
It is amazing. You're right. They do. They are heavily into robots. Wow. And the ghost cities, how many people can the ghost cities hold? Do you have any estimates on that?
I really don't. I know there's about, last count I ever saw, there's about a dozen ghost cities that would handle multiple millions of people each. You know, you add that up, I mean, maybe you got 50 million, I don't know, possibly. It's a lot of people, anyway, look at it. But they built these things according to a design, a city design, that was called in the 1930s a technate. It was an engineered city to have everything built in that you needed. They engineered 100% of the city from parks and, you know, bike paths and the septic systems and where the art center would be and public transportation and all that kind of stuff, engineered from the ground up. And they sat empty for years because nobody wanted them. So they figured out how to make people want them. You go out and put a gun at the back of their head and say, go want it or we'll shoot you.
Pat, I think I first wrote about this around 3 years ago. And at that time, I was getting reports that sizable numbers were already being moved at that time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there were.
And
it just wasn't. Yeah.
I also had information that Hank Paulson and the boys from Goldman Sachs had worked with the Chinese in setting this whole system up. What do you know about the origin?
Well, Dave, we've talked about this before in terms of the Trilateral Commission. Members of the Trilateral Commission, that elite group that was founded in 1973 by Rockefeller and Brzezinski, that group was responsible for opening China up in the first place. It was Henry Kissinger that first went to China on an illegal trip without even notifying Congress, so he's going to a communist country, to reestablish trade negotiations. And then Brzezinski completely swept up the whole thing. He sealed the deal during the Carter administration. Every ounce, every dollar of investment from that time, certainly for a long time, was funneled into China by connected members to the Trilateral Commission. Companies, you know, corporate international companies like Caterpillar Tractor, Deere and Company, Bechtel Engineering, GE. Those are the companies that built China. They built the infrastructure. Bechtel Engineering had so many projects over there. They got filthy, stinking rich off of it. They had so many projects. I don't know how they hired enough people to handle it. But they built the infrastructure in China. They invested in the factories. They invested in the technology to get them running. They basically gave them everything they had today. And that investment has continued to grow over the years to where China is today. And you look at the leadership in China today, and you could ask the question, who really owns China? Well, it's not the people sitting in the Politburo. It's the people that have invested the money that own the country. And those are these global corporations who have converted China's political system into a technocracy. Because this is what the Trilateral Commission set out to do in 1973, was to create a new international economic order. That's exactly what they said. You know that. You read it. And the only question is, what does new mean? I found out what new means. New means technocracy. They stole the idea from the 1930s mm-hmm. and reinvented it under the name of sustainable development that the United Nations is pressing everywhere. Okay, what do you hear coming out of Chairman Xi's mouth now all the time about sustainable development? Well, you hear China is going to be the global leader by 2030. They're going to be the leader in finance. They're going to be the leader in technology. They're going to be the leader in alternative technology, et cetera, et cetera. They want to be the most sustainable nation on the planet of the Earth, on the whole planet, by 2030. They're leading the charge. It's technocracy. They are a technocracy.
Communism is the perfect breeding ground for technocracy because the elimination of personal choice and individual liberties, it's just a natural tie-in. So I want to go back to the Chinese peasants that are being forcibly transferred to these ghost cities. What will these people do for a living? Do they have ready-made jobs? I mean, what are we talking about?
Well, I don't know. I mean, maybe they have some kind of grunt labor that they can give to them to do, but they're not, you know, I mean, especially when you get over, 40, 50 years old, you're bent over because you've been picking rice all your life.
Right.
From the, you know, what can you do? I don't know. They may get a stipend, like some kind of retirement or whatever, just to get out of the way. But my guess is they're going to die. A lot of them are just going to flat out expire. Because if you don't have any hope in life, what's the point of living?
Wow.
I don't know.
I'm projecting this into the United States because there is a move, as you know, in our country, to eliminate private farming and replace it with corporate farming.
Oh, yes.
So can you make a link between what we're seeing in China and what's happening presently in our country?
It's the same policy, Dave. It's not. There's no difference. Like I said, with smart grid and with these other things, it's the same policy being implemented everywhere. Agenda 21, which is now morphed into 2030 agenda. Agenda 21 was the plan for the 21st century. It was the agenda for the 21st century. They called it. So the United Nations went around to all these various countries with one plan, Agenda 21. And they rubber stamped every single nation with Agenda 21 policies. So we have exactly the same Agenda 21 here that they have in China. It's the same book. It's the same playbook. You're a coach. What if every coach in the league had the same playbook?
I'd beat them. I'd beat them all.
You have to go beat them up. But you know, it's like the whole world is marching to the same drummer.
Sure.
So you could go to India, same Agenda 21. You go anywhere in Europe, same Agenda 21. Go to Canada. Look at Trudeau up in Canada. This man is so sustainable development minded, it's not even funny. He is absolutely sold out for sustainable development.
How do they get the leaders to go along with them?
I don't know. I look at it as a global delusion, a mass delusion. But honestly, is it money? Maybe. Is it bribery? Maybe. Is it other kind of co-option or subversion? Maybe, you know, like, maybe there's ways to compromise leaders into going along with the program. They all are actually getting quite wealthy off of it. Look at people like Al Gore. You're doing okay.
How much has Al Gore made? Is it $10 billion? That's what I hear.
I think he's the first green, what they call a green billionaire. I think he was the first. And he's worth a lot of money. How much, I don't know, but a lot.
Let me tell you where my mind's going. I'm going totally conspiratorial, and I apologize, but it's not a natural act to take farmers off their land by the millions and put them in pre-built housing and not wonder if this pre-built housing isn't really some form of concentration camp.
Well, how many people have ever seen a ghetto in the United States that, most of the ghettos were built by the government at one time as low-income housing,
mm-hmm.
and after they deteriorated and weren't maintained for a period of time, they became ghettos, ghetto buildings, and now they're just rat infested. A lot of them are just rat infested, crime infested, drug infested cesspools. Well, that's what happens when you put people in. They're not skilled. They're not property owners. They don't own anything. They're just shoved into a place and say, you live here, you exist here. They have no ownership responsibility. They have no pride of ownership. No way to get ahead. They just have to live there and exist. That doesn't work. It never worked anywhere. It never worked in our country. It won't work overseas. But yeah, it may not have a barbed wire fence around it, but maybe it doesn't need to, you know? Maybe it doesn't need a fence. Maybe the people will be so imprisoned by their own will at that point that they're just broken and have nowhere to go, so we might as well stay here.
Well, that sounds like I think it's going to go. This is just such a shocking development because I see us right around the corner from doing the same thing. And this is truly upsetting because it's American corporations, based corporations, I should say, that actually set this up with the ghost cities. I'm really kind of, I'm searching for the words here, Pat, because, like I said, when you move millions of people and they have nothing to contribute, it's Fabian socialism. You have no reason to keep them alive. And you just have to wonder what's going to come next. And
the Agenda 21 document and some of the leaders of the early Agenda 21 movement, they said at that time that the Earth could not sustain a population much greater than 800 million people. That's what they said. How do you figure? Well, what's going to happen to the other six and a half billion people? Well, they don't specify that.
How familiar?
I just pulled up the story here, Dave. That I just found it on technocracy.news. Let me read you a couple of paragraphs.
All right.
This was from the press agency in Beijing, where I pulled this press release. The Chinese government said it plans to relocate 100 million farmers, or about 12% of rural population, mainly into smaller cities with a large stockpile of unsold homes, and turn the farmers' small holdings into larger farms. But farmers who choose to move and get an urban household registration, or hukou, they call it, will have the right to decide whether to keep their farmland or sell it, the State Council China's cabinet said in a policy meeting released on Tuesday. This was back in 2016, a year ago. The State Council said it plans to move at least 13 million people registered as farmers out of the rural areas permanently each year from 2016 to 2020, with at least 100 million people affected after the 5 years. Small plots of land left behind by city-bound villagers, they call them city-bound villagers now, could be turned into larger farms that use modern methods to make the agricultural sector more competitive, policymakers said. Authorities had hoped the government-led migration could also help reduce the large stockpile of unsold homes, particularly in smaller cities, built during the property boom in recent years. Of course, that speaks to the ghost cities, plenty. You know, this thing goes on, but you read this, Dave. This is so Huxley, Brave New World.
No, it's rewilding too.
Oh yeah, but this is a land grab. That's all it is. The government's going to be a big bully, drive people off the land into these houses they built that nobody wanted, and they're going to swipe the land from them. They'll get it one way or another, whether they get paid or not. They're gonna lose their land, and the government's gonna get it, and they're gonna turn it over to the corporate farm sector. That's called, here in our country, we call that eminent domain, right? It's the grabbing of land from people who really don't want to sell it to use it for some other government ordained purpose. We've never seen anything in America this big. Oh, wait a minute, though. I mean, back up a minute. What about the time that Bill Clinton grabbed 2 million acres of prime mineral land in Utah? You remember that?
Yes, I do.
Where he just declared it's going to be now, whatever, a national monument or something. And he's, with a stroke of a pen, it was basically neener, neener.
Yeah.
Now you see it, now you don't.
Well, let me ask you a question where I think there's a parallel planned in America. And Bob Kuglick, I think his name is, he was Obama's first community service advisor. He has a website called America2050.org. Are you familiar with that?
Oh, yes.
So let me just lay this out for the listening audience. In there, they have many, many different aspects of Agenda 2030. But one of them is that America, in a future date, is going to have 11 megacities, each with a population of 6 million each. Mm-hmm. And my question is, where's the other 90% of the people going to go?
Oh, yes. You know, all of these megacity or mega regions containing the megacities are being defined as regions into which all surrounding rural communities will be automatically assigned. They will have no choice, but they will be assigned to those larger cities. They don't live in them physically, but they're going to be assigned to those cities, and those cities will assume like all, you know, zoning regulations and stuff like that, you know, smart growth regulations, whatever. Whatever applies to the city will automatically be applied to the rural community as well.
I'm already living it, Pat.
Yep.
You know about the property rights dispute that we had with McCain and some government officials, and they tried to drive us off our land. Well, I live in unincorporated Maricopa County, and people, that's the largest county in Arizona, and we have our general plan, and it's called General Plan 2020, and this general plan is controlled by the nearest suburb, which is Surprise. And they are none too friendly to us, so it's already happening. The cities controlling rural areas where the people like ourselves are disenfranchised and don't get to vote on our future.
That's exactly right. I'm looking at America 2050's website under megacities and mega regions, and then under Arizona. There's a link there to Arizona. It's called the Sun Corridor. And it says the Sun Corridor is equivalent to Indiana in size and population, but will add another Indiana's worth of residents by 2040. This goes right up from Tucson, Casa Grande, Phoenix, on up northward a little bit. And if you look at the map carefully out to the left of it, where it's kind of a shaded blue area, it's not dense city out where you live, but your little city, your little town, is dead smack in the middle of the Arizona Sun Corridor. So you have been assimilated, as the Borg used to say on Star Trek.
Yeah, you're right. We have. Well, they wanted to put the original thing is, and maybe it's a lot of people are new to listening. Yeah. So, to old audience members, I'm sorry, forgive me, but I do need to tell the story again. We woke up one day. We bought what was going to be our retirement home someday, and we bought it prematurely because we got a great deal on some pretty good sized land. And we were notified by our neighbors, "Hey, we can't get a permit to do anything. Build a fence, build a pool." And these were all relatively new homes and in rural area. And then the government types were saying, "You're too close to Luke Air Force Base." Well, that was a load of bull because we were 30 miles away from Luke. They had to fly the planes over a quarter of a million people to reach us. So we knew that wasn't it. And then I discovered one night when I was looking at a map that there were three other areas in Arizona where they were using a nearby military base to deaden development and to seize homes if they could by forcing us off our property. And then we discovered, all these areas have a planned Canamex Highway corridor out of the Central American Free Trade Agreement, co-sponsored by John McCain.
and we did battle with John McCain's people. And eventually we won. I don't know if it's a permanent victory, but eventually we did win after an 8-year battle. But let's get down to the bottom line where I'm going with this. This was an attempt to force us out of a rural area so they could put the highway through, grab our underground water. We have the largest underground water supply in the Southwest called the Hassayampa, and they wanted us off of that, and they wanted us back in the cities, and this is what's happening in China, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's exactly what's happening. Now, and again, that's because Agenda 21 is Agenda 21, no matter where it is.
My goodness.
Same policy. Same identical policy.
Wow. They must think that we know another Chinese word and we're really stupid, and that Chinese phrase would be low IQ. They must think we're really dumb and we can never figure this stuff out. So corporate farming kicked the people off their land, and I experienced this firsthand. So, folks, if you think Pat is just kind of talking out his ears about something that may or may not happen, you're listening to the show of somebody that they tried to do it to.
Yep.
Pretty amazing stuff, Pat. It's scary, and I know they're not done with this. That's why I said when you're talking about the Chinese situation, it's rewilding.
Yes.
Because we see those maps out there. You know the one with the bright yellows and the red?
Oh, yes.
And stuff? Yeah.
Oh, yes.
And they show that they want all these areas to be free of people. And I'll tell you where you saw this. And I was... You could have knocked me over with a feather. It was when the first Hunger Games movie came out, and I went with my family, and I'm watching an absolute horror as the train that was taking the tributes from District 12 was traveling to Capital City. And the whole way, there was no development, just a high-speed bullet train.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But hundreds of miles of not one human being living outside in the country.
Yep. The old Hyperloop high-speed train that Elon Musk wants to build. This is exactly right. And Hunger Games was a dystopian look into the future, because the whole thing of allocating food is ridiculous when you consider how much open land they had. Absolutely ludicrous. So you know it was all just a phony setup. They were just jacking with people for no other good reason.
Oh, no question. And not only that, I think I'm going to probably have to revisit this topic, but this is something I found. Suzanne Collins, who wrote the Hunger Games trilogy, she claimed that this was no more, Pat, than about gladiator games, and she was reliving old Rome in a different setting. And I'm thinking, boy, that old lady really accidentally knew an awful lot about Agenda 21 land use. And the withholding of technology and technocracy was in that movie. And boy, it was incredible. And here's what was interesting. She would give no interview. She did one interview on Good Morning America where she sounded like a babbling idiot. She didn't even know her own movie. She was given the script and told to write it. And let me tell you where else you see it. There was another book that came out, and it was called Among the Hidden. And it was about population control, and it was kind of based on China's, at that time, one-child policy. My son read the book in fifth grade. And this Margaret Haydix Turner person, and she was a struggling child's author, just like Suzanne Collins. Neither one of them had ever written anything other than children's fantasy books until The Hunger Games came out and this Among the Hidden came out. And I tried to pursue Margaret Haydix Turner for an interview. I couldn't get her to give me the time of day. And I'll tell you why. They were given the script to write these Agenda 21 books.
Yeah.
I actually am convinced I'll never, ever not believe that that wasn't true. So it's, my gosh, Pat, it's here. It's here.
It is. Let me tell you, we got a couple of minutes. Let me tell you what one of the things I'm doing about it. The people ask you all the time, I know, well, what can we do about anything, right?
Sure, sure.
And I know you love solutions, but I teamed up with a lady in California that's a professional trainer for local activists. Her name is Mary Baker. She's written a book called Citizen Ninja, Stand Up to Power. It's a great book. And she's trained hundreds of people in California the last couple of years in person on how to be local activists. And she turns people into what she calls citizen ninjas. that's an oriental term. Nobody's got the nunchucks or the, you know, throwing stars or anything like that. It's nothing physical, right? It's all mental. But citizen ninjas are being trained to be able to go into their local community and kick butt in a way that's effective, not just combative, not just, you know, yelling at people and slurs and, you know, ad hominem attacks. But she's training people to actually go into their own community, intermingle with the people that they're running the community, and figure out ways to throw a big, giant monkey wrench into their plans so that they just can't do it anymore. This is kind of exciting stuff. Well, Mary and I have teamed up to do citizen ninja training around the country using a webinar format. It's all online. Videos, of course, you know, like online video. And we just started our third cycle of students last night. And I tell you, it's fun, but I'm also kind of excited, Dave, because these students we've got that have signed up, and every one of them paid $50 for the training, by the way. These students that have signed up are so excited to get some actual practical tools and skills that they can use to go out and have confidence in their community, that they can go out and actually do something. And we're not teaching them the issues. You do that just fine. We're not trying to tell them, well, there's this issue and that issue, and here's how you do this one, how you do that one. We're giving people the basic skills. It's kind of like Vince Lombardi back in the early 60s when he got a little bit upset at the Green Bay Packers, and after they had lost a championship, the next season came out and held up a football and said, gentlemen, this is a football. I can't imagine what the team thought. But come on, coach. We're all professional season football players, for crying out loud. Don't tell us that's a football. But he said, we're going back to the basics, guys. You've lost the basics of the game. We're going to learn how to play football from the ground up again. Well, the Green Bay Packers won, what, 5 or 6 out of the next 7 Super Bowls? Case in point. The basics matter. And so Mary's teaching people the basics, you know, on how to do this stuff.
Do you teach them things like, you know, effective means of protest and?
Well, not so much that, not so much the protest, but for instance, when you go into a city council meeting or a, you know, one of these visioning meetings, right? And you run up against all these various actors in there. They've got the plants, the shills, they've got the bullies. How do you handle a bully when somebody starts out of the blue shouting you down or calling you an idiot? You know, how, you can't say that. Yeah, where's your facts? Whatever. These people are just, their agents provocateur, they're troublemakers. How do you stand up and disarm to a bully? How do you disarm him? How do you turn his own energy against him to end up making him the fool and you the hero? That's a very real thing. Citizen ninjas learn how to do that. Citizen ninjas are learning how to practice situational awareness, just like in self-defense, right? You know what I'm talking about, right?
Absolutely.
You always should be scanning the horizon to see what's around you and if there's any danger. And sometimes you get the red alert. Sometimes you're in the yellow zone. And sometimes you're just kicking back, drinking the Kool-Aid in the backyard. But situational awareness is the first rule of good self-defense. That's true for citizen ninjas as well. You walk into any group of people, you should scan them immediately to find out who is there, what's the situation, are these ignorant people, are they activist people for the other side, you know, what are they all about? Situational awareness. Then they're learning how to peg people that they come in contact with. You know, there's a scale that we use to peg where the person is that you're talking to, trying to communicate with. The stuff is just genius stuff. But it's basic, so basic. Once you hear it, it's like, dang, I knew that, kind of. But I never verbalized it before, never practiced it before. I felt the same way when I went through my first concealed carry class up in Idaho several years ago. You know, the teacher he's a brilliant guy, long career, and he's a master handgunner, and he trains military and police forces all over the country. And I listened to this guy speak, and he didn't tell me anything new, really. But I said, I knew that, but I never put it all together. You know, I never practiced those things that I guess I knew they were true, but I never practiced them before. And he said, you need to practice them now. So we did. The same thing, we're training citizen ninjas same way.
Well, let me ask you before we have to go, how do people become involved in this training? It sounds fascinating to me.
Well, they can search for Citizen Ninja on the internet, or they can go to localactivist.org and they'll find us there too. That's the new home of Citizen Ninja training, localactivist.org. And people can take a look. I encourage people to take a look at it. You may not want to take a training right now. That's fine. But this is what we need, Dave. You know, you can't get your point across if everybody's your enemy. You just can't. And we've lost the art of civil discourse in America. It's gone, unfortunately. And what's the point of going and just throwing rocks at people? What's that going to accomplish? Nothing. Citizen ninjas need to be trained to be effective at actually getting things done. Not just making trouble, not just trying to muscle their way and be the bigger bully. I'm a bigger bully than you. I can shout louder than you. That's not how anything's going to get saved. And our local communities is what's at risk right now all over the country. If we don't save our local communities, nobody thinks the government's going to come and save us. Are you kidding?
Well, they're the problem.
They're the ones that got us into this mess.
Exactly, yeah.
So it's you and your local community and me and my local community. Maybe the twain will never meet, but we both have the same job to do, and that is clean up our local communities and get this Agenda 21 crap out of Dodge. We need to run it out of town on a rail one way or another and scuttle their plans.
Well, Pat, we are out of time, and I feel like we have unfinished business. We have to follow up quickly. I'll be in touch with you. We need to do another follow-up interview, but this has been very informative. Give out that website address again where people can go find this training.
localactivist.org.
Okay, sounds great. Pat, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Dave. Take care.
Well, that's my friend Pat Wood. And you've heard me tell the story before. Pat really opened my eyes to the way the country was being run in detail. He wrote that book called Tri-Levels Over Washington, which is now available in reprint. And boy, oh boy, what great stuff he's doing, but how disturbing were those Chinese revelations? And if you don't think it's coming here, well, when we talk about the internet, it's Google that set it up in China. That's the problem right there. I mean, Google did the whole thing, and now they're going to set up the same thing here. They're moving in that direction, inch by inch. It's a cinch. It's like the frog in the boiling pot. And, of course, the biggest eminent domain in the world, China, what do you think they've been doing to the Bundys and to ranchers and farmers in Northern California and Southern Oregon? The BLM forcing them off their land, not honoring the water compacts. I could go on and on, but it's the same darn thing. It really is. Well, I wanted to take just a moment here and just mention that on this Thursday, we will recognize the 54th anniversary of the assassination of President John Kennedy. And that event is still a watershed event today. It is a very important event. And I say watershed because it's really when the New World Order came out of the closet. It's really the eye-opening experience for many, many people. And John Kennedy was a flawed man, like we all are. All flawed human beings. We fall short of the glory of God. But he got into office and saw just how evil they were. And he was determined to fight against them. And I've got a couple of podcasts out there you might want to check out about what happened to JFK and why. And if you think there's any meaningful discretions or disclosures coming out from the released files. Think again, they're heavily redacted. One thing that did come out, Oswald did not do the shooting by elimination, because it's pretty clear from what they're releasing that Kennedy was shot from the front and Oswald was behind. But aside from that, we don't really have anything meaningful. And through the course of this week, I'm going to populate YouTube with one or two disclosures of what I've known, the research that I've brought. But I'll whet your appetite a little bit. The man who fired the fatal headshot on the grassy knoll, his name was Lucian Sarti, Corsican Mafia hitman, brought into play by Christian David, the head of the Corsican Mafia at the time. And we have his identity because of four separate testimonies on tape. I did, well over 1,000 hours of research with media, and I found four references to him, naming him as the shooter on the grassy knoll. And he was wearing a Dallas police uniform. And the Marianne Mormon photo blow-up called Badge Man shows who he is. And who do I think was the mastermind without going through all the detail? Well, if you follow the money, you know, namely Federal Reserve, Vietnam, nuclear arms race, C-notes, oil depletion allowance, all that good stuff. When you follow the money, if David Rockefeller and friends did not plan this, the day that John Kennedy died was the day that the world's biggest lottery was awarded. I don't see there's any way that he wasn't. Kennedy was an anathema to the New World Order. And at the end of his life, we can say what he want about his private life. At the end of his life, he was standing with the people. And I'm getting that feeling with our current president, with Donald Trump. And I do know that there's a counter coup to match the coup. And I will tell you, the final step of any coup is assassination. So do I have anything to say they're going to take him out on this date and this is how they're going to do it? No, I don't. But I know how coups work. And our president is in a great deal of danger. We're a little gleeful and joyful today because so many good things have happened for the good guys. But let's not lose sight of the fact that his life could be snuffed out in a moment's notice. And the deep state is capable of any of that. Well, anyway, that's it for the Common Sense Show. I want to thank you for joining us. Thanks to our guests for being here. And we will see you back here again next week. Go out and have a great week. God bless.